Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to another Wasted Saturday Night. I am Josh Hadley. With me is Glenn from the UK, Criddle.
Greetings from the porn-free Britain. I'm feeling very, very moral today and not at all sullied by anything disgusting.
I'm surprised you're not feeling a little backed up down there.
It's possibly a little bit of that as well. If I sound a little bit more uptight than usual, it's probably that.
If you were any more uptight than usual, you'd be a god.
Maybe I am.
And back here in America, we have Sarah Hanley with us.
Hey, to counter and balance, I'm a virgin in the San Fernando Valley. Think of that.
And yet she wears that proudly, too. You know what? Virgin in the San Fernando Valley. Am I the only one that sees that could have been a canon movie?
Oh, that totally would. There would be ninjas.
Well, it's canon. That goes without saying. So, but hey, Glenn, do you know the Adam and Eve promo since you can't use it?
I can't even log onto their website, I don't suppose, these days.
That's true. All right. Well, what you do is you go to adamandeve.com. Sarah, you can. Glenn, you probably can't. And you use the promo code STATIC, and you would get 10 free gifts along with whatever you order. You would get 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping. So, Sarah, you can order a butt plug. Glenn, you can't. I'm just pointing it out, you know, the geographical differences we have. So, but tonight what I want to talk to you about is changing the past to satisfy the future and usually wrecking it. For instance, The Wire comes back to TV, the 5-season HBO crime series comes back to TV this month, and they've butchered it. The Wire, David Simon, the creator of The Wire, shot all of these. These were shot in the early 2000s, full frame. They were composed full frame. Well, being remastered in HD, HBO says people will not accept HD if it's full frame. So they have fake widescreen all the Wire episodes, basically slapping black bars on the top and bottom of the screen, cutting the screen off, completely destroying the cinematography because, look, now it's widescreen. Do you think that the new audience really won't accept HD unless it's widescreen, even if something was shot in HD but composed full frame? Sarah?
It makes me weep on the inside. How many times do we have to go through this? People saying, people won't watch black and white. And people saying, well, if you have something that was in the theater and you put it on TV, you have to cut it down. Otherwise, they won't accept it. If it's a good story, they're not looking at the sides of the screen. I promise you this. They will accept it because it's something that needs to be seen. If it's something that doesn't age well, then maybe you have to pretty it up. And if that's what they're admitting, then it would be nice if they said that right out front. But they're being idiots.
You brought up black and white. I want to talk about that later. But first, I want to get Glenn's thoughts on this.
It's not something that's really that new, though, is it? It with the old VHS cassettes, when widescreen televisions first came out, they started stretching the images to be in widescreen format, and vice versa. They did it both ways and completely just mashed the image around. And I don't think it's ever been a very popular thing. It's always struck me as something which is so frivolous and just contrary to the vision of the director. I've never understood that why anyone would think that's a good option. No, it just seems so daft.
Well, do you think it has something to do with not so much that the audience won't accept HD unless it's widescreen, but HBO in this case, assuming the audience is so stupid that they think the audience won't accept HD unless it's widescreen?
Well, I don't think they could, the audience would refuse something just because it's in a different format. I think it's one of those things that when you're watching any movie or TV series or whatever, you kind of get used to whatever format it's in. If it doesn't fit your screen, it takes you a couple of minutes at worst to adjust to it. And certainly I think HBO's kind of underestimating the audience to some degree. I don't really know of any mass movements to get something done in widescreen that wasn't already in widescreen or was in standard and they're going, oh, you've got to have it in widescreen. I think certainly amongst anyone who's in the slightest bit informed, they're going to look at that and go, it's wrong. And that's going to be bad publicity, surely. maybe I'm being crazy here.
No, I think that the problem that you just hit is that the people who are informed, and the people who are informed are not the people who have a hand on the money, and they're not the people who have the hand on which thing is going to be put next. For example, HBO, you have HBO Go, you have a bunch of shows that were on the air years ago. Please put them up there. I want to see Arliss again. But past
Spicy
that.
Spicy City. Ralph Bakshi's
oh,
Spicy
would be
City.
Fabulous. But yes, these are people who are so focused on what they think the future is, what they think the new shiny is, what they think is going to get them the next bonus, that this is the idea that makes sense to them. It has nothing to do with the reality. It has nothing, less than nothing to do with the audience. They think that by changing a little, by putting their signature on it, that it's going to make it theirs, that it's going to be seen as their idea, and they're going to get to the next step in their career.
Yeah, and I think I've seen so many examples of films which were, you know, pretty much standard definition, which have been thrown into high definition. The most notable example I can think of, probably Inland Empire by David Lynch. If you look at that on, even on DVD, it looks fine on DVD. You look at the Blu-ray edition, and it looks bloody awful. I can't get behind the kind of thinking that goes, oh yeah, yeah. Well, it's got to be HD. It's got to be HD.
You know? That actually goes to. Have you seen the? And I don't know if it's the British DVD did this or not, but the American DVD release of Predator, or the American Blu-ray release of Predator from 1987, Glenn. They used the Avatar computer program that used so much digital noise reduction to make Predator look like it was shot in HD that they've reduced all grain to the point that Arnold and Action Jackson and everybody, they look like wax dummies of themselves. They don't look like people anymore because so much digital noise reduction was done on this thing. It looks horrendous.
Yeah, and there's so many examples of that, and it's just it drives me crazy, especially when you do get this push for HD and you've got Blu-rays being released, and it just looks weird. Shivers was another one on Blu-ray. It kind of looks...
The Cronenberg movie?
Yeah.
That was shot on 16mm!
Exactly.
You can't make 16mm HD. You physically can't.
The maddest thing about it is the image itself doesn't look particularly clearer. It looks a bit cleaner, but it doesn't look clearer. And when you get the titles come up, any text on screen, it's like somebody has taken cardboard cutouts of the letters and shoved them on the screen. It looks so out of place. So you got the title sequences, just weird. And I've been having this conversation with a few of my friends about this sort of stuff. They're going, oh, this film's coming out on HD. This one's coming out on Blu-ray. This film's coming out on Blu-ray. And going, it's not necessarily a good thing. And like I say, Inland Empire was a perfect example. You've got a film which was shot in SD, deliberately shot in SD, for very good reasons, whether it's a good film or not is, you know, kind of here nor there. But then they went, oh, here's a Blu-ray release and we're going to really, really clean it up and do all this sort of stuff. And the picture quality is just terrible because it's got all this artifacting where they've tried to upscale the SD image, which is entirely contrary to the original vision of the film. It's bizarre.
And we've created a problem that was never there before, never needed to be there, in that you've made an uncanny valley that didn't exist in the original print. You have these titles that look like you can just whack them off the screen, that they're not integrated with it.
I'm picturing the opening of Johnny Dangerously, where, remember, they actually drive over the titles and crush them with a car?
Yeah.
That's what I'm picturing when Glenn described that. I'm like, Johnny Dangerously opening?
Yeah. Yeah, and Evil Dead, that was another bloody good example, because on VHS it looks great, because it's got that natural grain which is going on, and it's...
Again, shot on 16mm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, but when you look at it on the DVD, the contrast is completely out, because they've cleaned it all up to the point that when you get the external shot of the cabin, you look up in the corner where the moon is, and it's such an obvious matte shot. It's like kind of, it's been posted on there, so there's this postage stamp of the moon up in the top corner.
That's because in the pre-HD era, things were shot knowing that you're not going to be able to see, say, a matte mm-hmm. line or a makeup line. Star Trek, Next Generation and Deep Space Nine being remastered in HD, they are horrendous. You can mm-hmm. see all of the makeup lines. You can see the matte lines. You can see where the, like, phaser blasts are animated in. All of these things you could not see when you were watching them even on DVD, because these were still taken from the SD masters. The problem is these things were never meant to be seen at that level of clarity.
But, and certainly not Riker's midriff.
Oh, God.
Well, he was
still
skinny.
He put on a little bit of weight in the later, didn't he?
Yeah. But I mean, they insist, well, people are bitching that, why are we putting something out on Blu-ray if it's not HD? Fine, fair enough. But then there's the counter argument of, why make it HD if it wasn't shot that way? I have never once seen an HD upconvert of something that was not shot in HD that has not looked terrible. It all looks like an upconversion.
You do get some examples which are rather good. Another David Lynch one, I guess, but Eraserhead. The high definition releases of that are stunning, to be quite frank, especially when it's sort of taken with a certain amount of care, that they're not arsing around with making absolutely everything as clear as possible. And certainly with, like, the Criterion release of that, that is so beautifully handled. Well, with the exception of the fact that they dropped a few seconds of one particular scene out, which is a real dull moment for them because they're so proud of their product. But
that was a mistake. That one was a mistake, less than a censorship move.
Yes, it was, absolutely. It was a mistake in the mastering of it, which is unfortunate, really.
But then, what have we kind of turned a corner here? Because both of you are old enough to have remembered when everyone bitched about widescreen. It's not filling up my entire TV. I'm losing image on the top and bottom. And didn't we have this same fight just on the opposite side 10 years ago? Are we always destined to fight like this in the media, or is this something different? Sarah?
I think that it's a problem with people who take too much ownership of their first adapter status, which I go, well, congratulations for you. You just bought a $2,000 VHS, you know, at the beginning of the 80s. But that doesn't mean that all of the rest of us have to change our entire media system just so that you have the most optimum picture. Everything will eventually raise its game to match your new TV or inner eye space vehicle as it is, but if you're going to force everything, then it's going to be a really uncomfortable birth there. We're going to have the problem where you're using the top and bottom of the frame of the movie shot so that you see all of the boom mics, when in the original theatrical release you didn't, because you just have to fill up every single inch of that screen, don't you?
I don't know. I've actually been to movies at the movie theater, or as Glenn would put it, at the cinema, where I've seen the boom mics and whatnot because it was an open matte print. I remember seeing Pump Up the Volume, the Christian Slater movie. Remember the scene where they're dancing on the Samantha Mathis is topless and they're dancing on his porch?
Mm-hmm.
I saw in the theater the towel that was wrapped around her boobs. You don't see that even in the widescreen print of the film on DVD. I saw Hollow Man. Don't make fun of me for seeing Hollow Man in the theater. I saw Hollow Man in the theater, and the entire conversation on the balcony, the boom mic is bopping back and forth between Elizabeth Shue and Kevin Bacon, not on the DVDs. So even in the theaters, when they open mat it, you're not supposed to see that stuff, but you do.
No, I was going to make fun of you if there was this topless scene and you noticed a boom mic.
No, there was a topless scene and I noticed, because I was looking at her boobs, and I'm like, there's a white towel covering her. What the? Oh, it's such a cheat.
Yeah, there could have been five boom mics and a Yeti behind her, and you would never have noticed.
Exactly. But, I mean, so I'm just countering with that. You do see that even when you see the movie in the theater sometimes, if they're using the wrong open matte print. Hell, yeah. Scanners 2, Mike White had a print of that when he worked at the movie theater in 1991, where you could see all the C-stands off the side. It was not widescreen, but they used an open matte print where you got too much information on the edges.
Glenn? One of the reasons I appreciate actual projectors and not the digital projectors, you don't get that.
You know what? I tried threading a digital projector once. Nobody was happy.
Did it press charges?
No, it actually thanked me and gave me a tip. Cool. Although in England, now that's illegal.
Oh,
but
Glenn, you keep ripping this in.
You know, are we fighting the opposite battle that we did with widescreen becoming so prominent? Because I'm sure you also heard all of the, it's not filling up my screen, I want the whole picture, blah, 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 bullshit that Sarah and I had, right?
Absolutely. You know, when people complained about the black bars, whether they be down the sides or top and bottom, people often had difficulty accepting that. So certainly when with VHS, the widescreen cassettes were coming out, and very few people had widescreen televisions at that point. But it made more sense to me at that point that they were trying to push these widescreen videos because, you know, they were trying to get the cinematic feel to the image, which is, you know, it's a noble enough pursuit, I guess.
Catch up to Laserdisc already. Laserdisc has been doing that since the 80s, damn it.
Yeah. You've got those considerations. And, you know, I mean, there was nothing really worse than when they started squishing up the pictures, the widescreen, to fit into a regular ratio screen. And you got the very tall heads, or did the opposite. With the HD thing, DVD had a point to some extent, but, you know, certainly with older films, it was getting to the point that it was just exposing stuff that wasn't intended to be seen, you know, because the picture was so damn clear. And now you've got Blu-ray, which is making the problem even more noticeable. And, of course, now you're going to get 4K Blu-ray. And didn't Peter Jackson say about his experiments with the Hobbit that he had a real problem after he did the faster frame rates and all that kind of stuff, that it looked so artificial that he didn't want to return to it?
Well, from what I remember from that was some of the critics said it was so HD it looked like news footage. And I'm one of those people, either of you are free to disagree with me, I think a movie should look like a movie. The news should look like the news. A movie should not look like the news. When I see a movie that's in that high of definition, it doesn't feel like a movie to me anymore. but then I am a snob, so.
No, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, partly that's down to what we're used to. So, yeah, we're used to movies looking a certain way. We're used to the news looking a certain way. And if they cross over, it's a little bit of a weird experience. But the biggest thing is, I think with films and stuff, and certainly what Peter Jackson kind of highlighted with his particular efforts was, there's so far you can go, especially when you're talking about stuff which is fantasy works, that a little bit of what you can't see makes a huge amount of difference to how you sort of actually see the film. When you see it so damned clear that you can see every little scratch in the set, then suddenly you're reminded that it's a set. It's more like being at a theatre, as in kind of like on a stage, in that you can see it so much clearer. It's there. It's as high definition as you're going to get it. And I think films lose something when they go too high definition.
Well, we had that when TV switched from SD to HD. I worked at an NBC station that was also the My Network station, and they were rerunning Grey's Anatomy episodes when we were finishing up the news. So I remember when we were always in post-production, there would be Grey's Anatomy up on the TV, on the HD. It looked like a soap opera. And I'm like, I'm like, we run these on the NBC station. I don't remember them. They looked like a TV show then. In the HD, they looked like a soap opera. I mean, there was no motion blur. There was that, you know, that motion, that whatever the program is that removes motion blur. It looked so fake. I'm like, how can anyone watch it like this? It literally looks like a daytime soap opera from the 1980s. How can you watch this? Besides the fact that Grey's Anatomy sucked anyway, but you know, you get my point.
I was going to bring up that, you know, you have the news and you have the soap operas, and they look very similar because they use very similar cameras because they both have very small budgets and they have to get it done right now. So they don't have the time to pick the shots and light it right and give you a bit more warmth and a bit more body to it. One of the reasons that I did not see The Hobbit. I'm sorry. I was forced to read the first of the Lord of the Rings books, and I wondered why we didn't get anywhere in it. But if you are going to do fantasy, especially high fantasy, you want warmth in that story. You want to invite people in. You don't want to see everything exactly in the foreground as you do in the background. There was an entire art style devoted to that when people started using photographs and saying, why should we do paintings? It's called super realism, where you paint everything in exact detail, and it is one of the freakiest things you will ever see because you can read the signs five blocks down, and that's where we've gone to in film.
But then you've also got like what 20th Century Fox is doing to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They're actually going beyond the wire, because Buffy the Vampire Slayer was made in the 1990s, before HD existed, or before a TV show was ever going to be shot in HD. The Wire was actually shot in HD, just still composed for full frame. Buffy and Angel were shot standard def and shot full frame. 20th Century Fox is not letting this go. Not only are they fake widescreening the Buffy the Vampire Slayer seasons for the Blu-ray release, they are also color correcting them and making them HD to the point where they are actually wrecking the images themselves. The Joss Whedon gives a perfect example of, there's a scene where Buffy's lying in her bed and Angel is lying on the floor. They shot the scene day for night. Angel's a vampire, so he can't have sunlight on him. So it's actually sunlight that's shot from behind, so it looks like it's moonlight. With the new color correction, it's clear it's sunlight. It's clear this was shot during the day, and he says this is not an isolated incident. They have wrecked the entire cinematography for 7 seasons of Buffy and 5 seasons of Angel to make them look HD on top of the widescreening. That, to me, is offensive.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the studios seem to do an awful lot is they go, well, this belongs to us, it legally belongs to us, we will do with it as we please. Where the best conversions, if they do them, tend to involve the directors, who will kind of sit there and say, this is how it should be done. That doesn't always work out terribly well, but you know, I certainly, I'm going back to Eraserhead, the Criterion versions, you know, done in association with David Lynch. So he supervised how it looks, you know, the contrast and how sharp the images should be and the sound mix and all that kind of stuff. So he was deeply involved in what was going on in that. Whereas, you know, with Joss Whedon and the Buffy series, it sounds like they basically just went, oh yeah, we're going to ask around with it, and perhaps showed him a little bit down the line what they were doing, and he was probably quite rightly horrified.
Well, and then sometimes when you do this, though, you run into unexpected problems. They tried to do this. Paramount, thankfully, backed themselves off. When they were going to put Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine onto Blu-ray, and I already talked about how the HD makes it look horrible, they were also going to try and fake widescreen them. And then they ran into a small problem. Because remember, Voyager was shot widescreen and cropped to full frame. Enterprise was shot widescreen. So that's no problem. Next Generation and Deep Space Nine were shot full frame, but the special effects were shot widescreen because of the different filming methods. So,
oh, can I see that?
So all of a sudden, they found that when we tried to fake widescreen this, it screwed everything up to the point where it was unfixable. So they said, screw it, we'll just make them full frame HD. And I know the Sci-Fi Channel ran into that when they started airing Babylon 5 in the late 90s. Babylon 5, the special effects were shot widescreen, the show was shot full frame. So they ran into a problem when Sci-Fi Channel aired them widescreen, the show was cropped to fit the special effects, which is just asinine.
Glenn, all of the little laser blasts, it just stops at a certain point on the screen.
Why did the photon torpedo just end there?
Just because.
But then it's... Go ahead, Sarah.
It's because you touch yourself at night.
I touch myself during the day. Don't presume when I touch myself. But now, does this say something about the new generation? That because kids that are in high school today have almost exclusively grown up with HD, they've grown up with widescreen. The kids that are just learning how to drive today have always had widescreen as the predominant format. Do you think this is a bit of us being put out to pasture, that things can't be full frame anymore? Or do you think that the audience, the new audience, won't accept something older not being in HD, not being in widescreen? Is this a generational thing, Sarah?
I think that it's something that they will be able to get away with the younger people, but as those younger people grow up and they see that there is a version that is less crap, they're going to gravitate towards that. They're going
less
to curse.
Crap. Is that the standard now? Less crap?
Well, some of these TV shows, yes. But you have this whole generation of people who they've had to start making needles for record players because there are video games right now that are putting out their soundtrack on vinyl. And I'm not saying that it's a big thing. I'm not saying it's not a hipster thing. But I'm saying that people go through the evolution of, I'm a kid, I like shiny, and then once I get to college, hey, my world has expanded, and there's this version where it doesn't hurt my eyes, and the story makes more sense. I think that I'll recommend this to other people. And then it expands out like a virus of quality.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, eventually people find the original style that these things were done in, and they will look at them and go, yeah, that's something which is worthwhile. You do get the progress of technology, which means, you know, when we're not going to go back to kind of the regular TV kind of ratio and all that sort of stuff for stuff that we're going to make, unless you're making something which is deliberately retro. So, you know, in that sense, it's a dead format, but I think people will kind of be able to look back at stuff that was done in that kind of format and done in the lower definition and still be able to appreciate it. I mean, Josh, you, I mean, like me, you like your old VHS cassettes and all that kind of stuff. I don't think that's necessarily just a nostalgia thing, but I certainly think a lot of the films that were released on that format were actually served very well by that format. You think of all those cheap exploitation films that we like, and you can't imagine them being in HD because everything would look terrible.
I've actually experienced that. Like, I grew up watching all the old Hammer films on late night television on like a local UHF channel. Mono sound, full frame, and a beat up print, usually missing the nudity. You wouldn't believe how many times I saw the Dracula films before I realized there were tits in them. You know, and then I got the DVDs, and I'm sure the Blu-rays would do this to me even more, but I picked up a DVD set that had the first four Hammer Draculas on them. Mm-hmm. They look wrong. They're widescreen, yeah. They're in HD, they're in stereo sound, it's a beautiful print. They don't look like to me what a Hammer film should look like. I'm not trying to say Hammer's supposed to look bad. I'm saying I grew up watching Hammer movies like this, so yeah. The widescreen does not look right.
The weirdest ones that I've experienced recently like that, I picked up Nosferatu and The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari on Blu-ray. And they are so clean, so pristine. And just the picture is just so perfect. They look like forgeries. It's really bizarre watching them because they look like they could have been made last week, you know, other than the fact that they're monochrome. Yeah, other than that, you kind of look and you go, I mean, you see every join in the set, you see everything in such clarity. It is just the strangest experience watching the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari in high definition. And I'm not sure if I can enjoy it or not anymore like that.
Well, Glenn, then it goes back to what you were saying, that it feels like a stage play where you have told yourself that you're going to ignore that you can see the sides of the set. Mm. In a movie, you're not prepared for that. You expect this to be an entire world, and to see the edges of the world is really disconcerting.
Or to see the towel on Samantha Mathis. Sorry, I can't let that go.
Yeah, well, I think about when Resident Evil, the video game, it came out with an HD version, and it got nothing but horrible reviews, not because it wasn't a playable game, but because they prettied it up so much that they took out all the grime, they took out all the smoke, they took out anything that made it a game that anyone would want to play.
I don't know. I think I'll argue with the fact that it was a barely playable game even in 1995. I'll argue with you on that.
The thing with the Nosferatu and Caligari, though, is generations have seen these films in a degraded form. And now, you know, I can imagine those degraded forms sort of disappearing, and the next generation and so on will only see these absolutely pristine versions. And it's such a shift in how you receive the film that that's really got ramifications for, you know, kind of how these films will be received.
Well, and not just films. This also happens in like comic books and in music. When I hear, when there was a whole bunch of metal bands like Slayer and that, when they first made the transition from, you know, cassette and the LP era to CD, they digitally remastered them and they sounded wrong. They sounded hollow. You know, these bands recorded these albums with that meant to be there. You know, the analog hiss. They sound wrong when they're remastered and put on CD. It's the same thing, Sarah, I'm sure you've seen this with comic books. All the old comic books. Remember in the 1980s when they tried that new style of like the dot for blacks? Now what they're doing is, because those don't translate well to reprints, so they're actually going and redoing and recoloring all the artwork. I just saw some of the examples of the old Marvel Comics Star Wars series from the late 70s as they're being released in trades now by, I think, IDW or Dark Horse or whatever it is. And they've completely recolored everything. So while it's the same artwork, it's not the same pictures.
No,
it looks just too clean, isn't it?
No, it looks harsher. It looks flatter. And even more than that, one of the reasons that I will insist on getting the single issues if I can, is because they will go in and they will re-letter things. They will switch things around. And I'm not saying that when you put it on paper, that's in stone. You want at least some logic to it of, you know, having a friend to pick this up because there's this incredible scene. I want to believe that scene is still there. It goes back to the translation that you were saying, from something from movie to DVD to Blu-ray to in your eye transmission. If we're talking about the same piece of artwork, I would like some consistency. And I think that is appreciated by the audience and not realized by the people putting this out.
I think when it comes to comics, I do see one aspect of where they're coming from. I have done it myself, where I have taken an old comic book from the 80s and I've scanned it. And when I scan it, it looks like shit on my computer monitor, because the computer monitor is trying to add definition that's not there on the page. So to a degree, I see, especially with digital comics and, you know, them making comics available for download, I do see part of their problem in these things translate like shit to digital. So I do see that aspect, you know?
Mm-hmm. Glenn, don't change dialogue. That's all I'm asking. Don't do that.
Well, okay, there's one aspect where when I interviewed Joseph Michael Linsner, when he reprinted some of his Cry for Dawn stories in Angry Christ comics, he decided he went too far in the original stories. There was one about a vampire that was killing a gay guy that had AIDS that was trying to pick him up, and he had a line about goddamn fucking faggots. Then years later, he decided, you know what, that was needless and it was offensive. So he chose to go and change the wording when he reprinted it. Because at first I was offended that they censored that. And then after hearing him explain it to me, I went, okay, I understand why you did that. I'm no longer angry about that change.
Yes, but he took that extra step to explain it. You can't leave your audience in the dark.
Exactly. Glenn, you not being a comic book guy, Do you kind of see what we're talking about? How even like with comic books, they're altering them for the youngins?
Yeah. And that's, I think particularly with that medium, it seems rather gratuitous because the technology is not really changed in kind of respects of what you actually receive, what you have in your hands. You've got the printed page. So the idea of arsing around with that seems
but
a little
it's
bit
no it's no
gratuitous.
Longer newsprint, though. It's that slick ass thick glossy paper, which won't take the same kind of, because I've seen where they take some of the old newsprint stuff and try and put it on that new slick paper. It also looks like shit.
Yes,
the stuff
yes,
was designed
does.
For newsprint.
Yeah, and I think it's a shame that they don't use the old newsprint for the more traditional style comic books. I think that's there's something wonderfully tactile about that as a physical medium.
I think 2000 AD, it read better when it was on newsprint than when it was magazine sized, you know?
Yeah, and again, it's getting into the whole kind of, you've got that extra level of definition on the page when you have the higher quality paper, which means there's more scope for stuff to not be hidden. And that's the thing, you know, when you're missing details in any image, whether it's a printed image or whether it's a projected image, you lose... If whatever you don't have on the screen, your brain sort of fills in, and it usually does it a damn sight better than there actually being the reality of it there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, ask Hitchcock about that.
Well, and then there's also one practical downside to comics and magazines all using that thick-ass paper, that glossy paper. God forbid you try and read it with a light source above your head. It's all gloss. My old newsprint Fangorias, they read just fine. But you go into a room with a new issue, it's just all glare, and you got to hold it at a funny angle. I'm sorry, that just really bothers me. That okay, I get you want the glossy paper. Have you ever tried to read this in a room with a light source directly above you? It's hell.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to take a picture of a page and you're like, how do I do this without that shine mark blocking out
things? I tried to take a picture when I was selling some comics, and I had to hold the camera at like a 45-degree angle to not get the flash reflecting off the cover. I mean the flash from the camera, not the flash to character. Since I was talking comics, I knew a nerd would put that together. But then one other aspect of changing things for the new generation is, how about the changing like a character when it goes from one medium to another? I'm not bitching about, oh, they didn't adapt the comic properly or anything like that. I'm talking about how you have to change the character to make them cooler when you bring them over to TV or you make a movie of these characters. It's like, oh, well, the comic book version's kind of boring. We got to jazz it up some, you know, for the kids. Or they do that with video games a lot, too. You can't bring back an old franchise just as it was and just tell the next chapter. No, now you've got to make the characters different and hipper and cooler. Is constantly pandering, and that's what I call it, pandering, is constantly pandering to the current generation good for the art or just good for lining the current pocketbooks? Glenn?
I think it's a shame when they do that kind of stuff, generally speaking. And obviously, when you're talking about taking characters from one kind of venue and putting them in another, sometimes you're reinventing the story. And in that respect, you know, sometimes it's quite legitimate. Sometimes you have to do it. Sometimes it's just desirable to do it. I think the worst thing is when they take... and I'm going to give the example, which will probably make you groan, Star Wars, with Han Solo and the whole who shot first thing. And it's such a tired argument, should it have been done or shouldn't it have been done? But essentially, they were trying to completely reinvent the character in the same film. It's not like they actually kind of even transplanted the character. And yeah, that's bloody annoying when they do that kind of stuff. If they keep the general feel of the character, that's kind of fine. It's fine to reinvent the character to some degree. I think completely changing the character so it's unrecognizable is pretty shitty behavior. And I think, you know, when I say that kind of thing, I'm talking about the whole kind of sort of Starsky and Hutch film where they took the characters and they just made them complete idiots.
Well, I was also thinking about something like the 2005 Keanu Reeves Constantine movie. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. I think it's a really well-written script. It's well-directed. Keanu does great in the part, actually, but he's not Constantine. They changed the character so much from the comic that he's not Constantine. He's just a guy called Constantine that's in a surprisingly great movie. But it's not Constantine.
No, and that does a disservice to the fans of the original material. But in those respects, you kind of look at it and go, the studios are looking for a bigger audience that aren't necessarily aware of the original material. You know, there's arguments to and fro when it comes to that kind of behavior. And personally, I think if you're taking a story from somewhere else, you ought to try to be at least a little bit true to that original source material. I don't like it as from a personal point of view, but I can kind of see it from the studio's point of view, in that they're making a film which they want to kind of, well, but they want to sell it. They want an audience who isn't necessarily aware of the original source material to have this film. And sometimes you do wonder whether or not they're actually just sort of crowbarring, say, the title Constantine into a script that wasn't necessarily Constantine, if you get what I mean.
Sarah?
Now, when I hear that somebody is going to update a game or a book or a movie, you will, I bet you a dollar that you will always hear that the person who is heading it is such a fanboy of the first thing, and they love it and they want to share it with other people. And if it's something that I like, I close my eyes and I cross my fingers and I go, please don't be bullshitting me, because
the Time Machine, the Guy Pearce Time Machine movie, is directed mostly
by the
grandson of H.G. Wells. How do you fuck your grandfather's story up that hard without being intentional?
Because he came only from animation, not from live action, and they didn't give him a movie before that to try it out on. You look at the friggin' film that Miyazaki's son made. I found that to be unwatchable. But one that you have DMC, which is a stupid title, which was a spinoff of Devil May Cry, which nobody liked. You have that Alien game that came out, and not only did nobody like, but they're in court because they think that they took all the money that they were supposed to use on that and use on their more profitable game. Yeah,
it did kind of suck, yeah.
Yeah. But then you have one of the animated shows that I'm watching this season, and I am in so much joy because they took this comic book from the 90s, and they made it into an animated show, and it feels that it's condensed, but it feels the same. All they did was put, you know, cell phones in their pockets. That's and made sure that their haircuts were modern. They did just enough. It's this much science and this much art, and you have to care about the source material enough to make it taste right. It's the difference between a joke working and a joke failing. And I think that we all know the quote that is one frame. You have to care enough to make it actually be true to the source material. And I don't think that we have enough people that actually do that.
Well, do you think when it comes to the mass media, like movies or TV, the reason they do that is they don't think the original material, if kept in its original integrity, would reach a wide enough audience, like the 1995 Judge Dredd? Even taking Stallone's ego out of it and his constant rewrites, the studio was backing Stallone because they wanted to make a Dredd movie, but then they thought Americans wouldn't get into it if they made it straight, so they needed to make a Stallone Dredd movie. Do you think that they're underestimating Americans in general? Because with a movie like that, you have to have it, you know, a mainstream movie. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're underestimating the audience, or are they just all pretending we're stupid?
I think that they also were hoping that the source material was well known enough that it would stick in people's minds, but not well known enough that they could do whatever the fuck that they wanted with it. And
I think people, that mattered by market, because like over here, people like you and I knew Judge Dredd, but Glenn in the UK, he's like the most popular comic book hero of all time to you guys, isn't he?
Certainly very, very high up there, definitely. You know, I mean, 2000 AD was just, it was huge. And of course, he's the central character in that particular publication. And I kind of was a little bit staggered by the whole Stallone Judge Dredd film. It didn't look like it. It didn't feel like it. It certainly wasn't the characters. It was literally like they just took some sort of really crappy photocopy of the original and then colored it in with crayons, and it's just bizarre to look at. And there's many, you know, and I did a review of the good one, you know, which was, you know, mildly critical of the film, mostly because it was almost exactly the same as The Raid. Which was, you know, coincidence, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, to be fair, Dredd started production before The Raid.
Yeah, but I mean, I kind of try not to make too much of a big issue about that, because I think they're both good films. And the better one is so much better. It captures the feel of the comic books so much closer. But then you look at what a crappy release it got. And you've got the crap film, which is a huge release, and the good film, which gets such a tiny, tiny release. And is that down to, you know, the finances of the studio that made it, or independent, obviously?
I know the answer to that one. That one is due to the 1995 Judge Dredd tanking so hard they lost. Mm. It only made back about half its budget, that the name over here had been tainted.
And you wonder, you know, how deeply they actually look at why something fails. Because, you know, all they had to do was go out there and ask a few people, why do you think this film wasn't successful? And you would get pages upon pages upon pages of reasons why that film was shit. And it's nothing to do with the fact that it's Judge Dredd.
But there's also a weird, and maybe I'm overanalyzing this here, because Judge Dredd is a British comic, mm-hmm. that is a satire of American politics and policing. When Americans try to do that, I think all the satire was leached out, strangely enough. I actually think that being cross-countries actually kind of created a weird conundrum. I mean, Sarah, you being a fellow American, do you see that? How Judge Dredd being how the Brits look at us as satire doesn't quite translate to us making satire of us?
Oh, absolutely. You have these people and they just see it as completely straight-faced. And they're like, but I was told that this was a comedy. What do we do about this? I know, Rob Schneider. He's funny. This will solve everything.
All right, you just said Rob Schneider's funny. You and I aren't friends anymore.
I said it sarcastically.
You still said it.
You're probably right to some degree, though. The translation of satire and humor from Britain to America, certainly, you know, not so much perhaps these days, but certainly even like, you know, a decade and a half ago, it's very different. And I think probably one of the good examples we can give of that would be Red Dwarf. Have you seen the American pilot that they did?
Yes, I did, but, and you may want to kill me for this, I didn't like the British version either. So to me, both versions sucked and were not.
The British version, certainly in the first, you know, first three series, probably, particularly, were very British humor. It was incredibly.
I have an example. The 1996 mm-hmm. Fox Doctor Who movie, that backdoor pilot. That is a perfect example of totally not getting why Doctor Who worked in Britain.
I don't think I've seen it.
I didn't hate it.
Eric Roberts is the master. He eats
of the set. He eats it with his giant mouth.
Oh, Eric Roberts is having so much fun. Glenn, there are drive-by shootings in this. This is so such an American take on Doctor Who.
Don't ruin it for him.
But like, one of the ones I can think of more than any other is, I don't remember when this series was. I didn't see it till the 90s. But the British series Whoops Apocalypse, which is a complete satire on American politics based on Ronald Reagan getting the world into nuclear war. And part of the reason the show is so funny to me is you guys were painting us with such broad strokes. I was like, was that intentional? Or do they really not understand American politics?
No, it's definitely intentional. Because one of the things that Britain did, well, certainly up until like just a few years ago, satiring people in power. And of course, you know, I mean, America's always been, you know, the world superpower. So it's very easy for us to kind of look at the United States and really do a hugely exaggerated caricature, which can come across as being, yeah, overly broad strokes, but it's part of the British sense of humor, very bawdy kind of sense of humor.
I think dry is the word you were looking for.
sometimes. And sometimes it's just grotesque. In the theatrical sense of grotesque.
I think you guys are just still pissed that we left you and you're still bitter over that. That we left you, we moved on, and we became something bigger than you.
Well, that's why they don't invite us to their little Olympic-y games.
We didn't want to go anyway. You think I want to see you with your new girlfriend and your happy life? No.
Yeah, no, we'll make our own. We'll have our own with hookers and with blackjack, and you're not invited.
You know what? We don't even need the blackjack.
We're happy playing hockey with the Canadians and stuff on that one. We'll be fine. They're like Americans, just kind of politer.
Fuck you.
If Dustin were here. All right. Well, we got to wrap up. So, where can people find Glenn Criddle?
I'm on Geek Juice Media, and I'm also on YouTube as LappyMan101.
Where can we find Sarah Hanley?
You can find me on the Facebooks. You'll find me soon on 1201 Beyond, and I will soon be putting up sketches for a top secret project that you'll all see.
I've already read it. So there. And you can find me at 1201beyond.com. Contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Go buy something from adamandeve.com. And remember, we have t-shirts, so buy a t-shirt. Send one to Glenn. Send one to Sarah. Send one to me. We can't afford our own t-shirts, sadly enough.
We're all actually naked as we do this.
Don't you judge me.
Right up, take my life and fuck it up.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.